Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. We're right in the middle of our franchise model series. Last week, my guest was Ed Waller from CertaPro Painters. We talked about consumer marketing. Today, I'll be joined by Mark Liston, Glass Doctor President, one of the Dwyer Group brands. Next week, Robert Stidham will be my guest, and of course, he's the CEO and President at Franchise Dynamics. We'll be talking about franchise sales and development, and we'll wrap up the franchise model series in 2 weeks with Amit Pamecha, the CEO and founder of FranConnect, as we talk about the ever-important technology in franchising. We're already lining up some interesting guests for our summer Franchisor Spotlight series, first ever on Franchise Today. If you've been a fan of Franchise Today, you know we usually take the summer off. This year, we're not doing so. We're going to be going live throughout the summer. We will be off on July 4th, obviously celebrating our nation's birthday. But we will go every Thursday starting July 11th. Dina Dwyer Owens, CEO of the Dwyer Group, will be my guest to kick off the series. And we're finalizing some additional guests throughout the summer. And there's been such tremendous response. And understand that the Summer Spotlight Series is not going to be promotional. It is non-promotional. It basically will be about best practices and how best practices in a specific area have really helped that particular franchise organization succeed and get to the level of success that they're at today. And there, as I said, there's been such great response from various people and my strategic partners over at Franchise Update Media Group, along with Fishman Public Relations, Elements Local, our technology partner, have been funneling requests by the dozens to us that were actually expanding the series as far as number of guests. And instead of the shows being an hour with one guest through the summer, the Franchisor Spotlight Series will be two guests per show. The first half will be one guest, and the second half will be another. So instead of only hearing from nine C-level executives or founders, you're going to wind up hearing from 18 during the summer. That's just going to be a tremendous amount of information. And, of course, then we'll come out of summer. We'll be focused in September on the IFA's Public Affairs Conference in Washington. And so it'll be Public Affairs Month for us on Franchise Today and also about giving back to the franchise community. Veterans and franchising, just a lot of different things. And another person from the Dwyer Group, Mary Thompson, will be my guest in September. Got confirmation of that yesterday. Mary was originally scheduled to be on today, but had some travel conflict. And fortunately, we were able to bring on today's guest, Mark Liston, in her place. And then in October and November, we're really going to focus on franchise sales and development and leadership, and in part that's going to be around Franchise Update Group's Leadership and Development Conference, which will be in Buckhead, Georgia, outside of Atlanta, as well as in and around the West Coast Franchise Expo in Anaheim, and then we'll wrap up the year in December with a year in review. We also have some special events coming up next week. We're trying to iron out a specific day and time, but I believe right now it will be midweek, maybe even an extension of next week's show. Susan Blackbeth will be my guest as we talk about the Dealmaker Summit, which is a private equity and franchising event that took place last year in Chicago the last week of August. She'll be doing that again with a very strong team of support. And she'll be on next week in a special event to talk to us about this year's event. So I'm really excited to see the second annual Dealmaker Summit come on the calendar. And, of course, we have some special events coming up in franchising. I think basically the spotlight next week from an international standpoint will be on the International Franchise Expo in New York City. If you're in and around the area, it's a great way to see 400-plus franchise brands basically talk about their concepts and their brands, and it's a great place to network as well. And then on June 25th and 26th, save those dates for the upcoming Franchise Consumer Marketing Conference, by Franchise Update Media Group, and that'll be in Atlanta at the Ritz-Carlton. And if you have anything to do with marketing and social media within a franchise organization, then this is the conference you should definitely attend. And if you think because you attended FranCamp that you'll skip this one, that's a bad decision, as both conferences deliver great value and from certainly different perspectives. I was at FranCamp, and I'm proud to be headed to Atlanta for this conference as well. And Franchise Foundry, who produces the Franchise Today Show, is a bronze sponsor at that event. So if you're going to be there and want to spend some time and chat and network, please contact me ahead of the event. We'll be more than sure to carve out some time. You can send me an email at segreta.paul@gmail.com, or, of course, follow me on Twitter at Paul Segreta. So, a lot going on in the franchise world, a lot going on in this series. Again, it amazes me as we came out of our fourth annual Franchise Legal Series, the amount of on-demand listenership and access. Here we are a couple weeks out of it. It's just been unbelievable. I can't thank everybody enough. I can't thank all the guests, Lane Fisher, Lee Plave, it just the list goes on and on, dedicating and committing so much of your time for the good of franchising, all about best practices. And, of course, all those segments, as well as all segments of Franchise Today, can be accessed on demand at blogtalkradio.com/Franchise Today Show. And today, of course, we're switching gears in our franchise model series, and we're talking about operations support and franchise relations best practices. And the emphasis, of course, is always on the franchise relationship itself. Mark Liston is president of Glass Doctor, a brand of the Dwyer Group. He's been in franchising since 1981. As many of you know that are involved at the IFA, Mark is very active and involved in the International Franchise Association. He's a media past chairman of the Board of Governors for the Institute of Certified Franchise Executives, having earned his CFE in 2005. He's also on the IFA's Educational Foundation Board of Trustees. Previously, he's a member of the VetFran Committee and IFA's Public Relations Committee. And I'm really honored to have Mark as my guest today. Mark, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thanks, Paul. It's great to be here. I'm glad Mary's traveling. I was in a meeting with her early this morning, right before she caught a plane. And I thanked her that she was getting out of town so I could be on the show. So I appreciate it.
Well, that is great. And it's amazing, as long as you've been in franchising, as long as I've been in franchising, that we just recently had an opportunity to sit and talk and network a bit at FranCamp. And that was really a great event. And certainly look forward to spending some time with you at future events. A lot of great things going on at the Dwyer Group. And, you know, when I think of the Dwyer Group, and I've had Dina Dwyer Owens, the CEO, on Franchise Today in the past, right as she came out of the Undercover Boss experience, which was really very, very heartening, enlightening, tearful, et cetera, and the list goes on. And I'm anxious to have Dina on again during our Summer Franchisor Spotlight Series. And I think it's, you know, the big thing that I think about when I think about, you know, Dina, the Dwyer Group, meeting you, talking at length with Mary Thompson, Monica Fye from BizCom, the PR company that works right with Dwyer Group, and this one word that always comes back around, it's culture. And I think as we talk about franchise operations support and franchisee relations, to me, there was absolutely no one else I wanted to speak with than somebody from the Dwyer Group, which was the reason why when Mary's had a schism conflict, I even said to her, we could talk at midnight. We'll pre-record the show. What can we do? And then, of course, it still wouldn't work out. And I said, well, there's got to be. Wait a minute. And here on my desk is a business card from Mark Liston from FranCamp. And I said, anyway, I got to reach out to Mark. And I'm so pleased that you were able to accommodate us today.
Well, I appreciate that. And when I listen to all the people that you have on here, what a great group of folks you have on. I'm just honored to be on the show, like I told you. And you're right. The culture here, what you see is what you get. I knew Dina from IFA. and I knew Mike Bidwell from IFA. Knew nothing about Glass, knew nothing about Glass Doctor, but I knew Mary. Mary was a good friend of mine. And as I, you know, my wife and I are living, we worked for Valpak before, and we're living down in Florida, and I love Florida. And I knew that, that the Dwyer Group was in Waco, Texas. I wasn't sure I wanted to ever live in Waco, Texas. I wasn't sure I wasn't, though. But I remember seeing Mary and reaching out to Mary, and I said, all right, let's go to, in fact, my wife did it first. She said, is what you see what you get? Is it really that way? Is Dina really like she is? And she says, it is. And we said, okay, Mary, how long have you been at the company? And she said, like 6 years. All right, there's no dead bodies or anything like that. And I came here a little over about 3.5 years ago, and it is. That culture is just amazing, and it's every day. You know, we had a meeting this morning. Mary and I were in this meeting with Dina early this morning, and we did the code of values first thing. At 8:15 this morning, I had a meeting. Every morning, I have a meeting with all my staff, and we start the meeting with the code of values. And it's just a way of life. You don't think twice about it. You memorize it. In fact, you'll love this, Paul. Today, as we started around the room, Dina said, let's have some fun. Let's say them backwards. So what? Wow. So there's about 20, you know, code of values. And so she started with the last one, and she started with having fun in the process. And I thought, well, Dina, that was easy for you to pick. Let's go to the next one. And fortunately, I had this folder in front of me with the code of values. And I said, she says, do you have it? Well, yeah, I'll just read it right here. So we all started laughing. And then after that, we went around the room, and everybody did know them backwards, too. So culture's real.
That is certainly very enlightening. And I wish more and more franchise organizations would adhere to something along those lines, because it really does resonate in the way of culture. And seeing Dina on CBS Undercover Boss, as I said, was very, very heartening. It was very touching, but it was also very enlightening. And I had the pleasure, obviously, of talking with Dina about the experience afterwards, and got some of the behind the scenes, both in our preparation for the show and during the show. And it's real. And I think that's the key. It's real. What you see is what you get, and then some. When I see Dina at IFA events, there's always a smile, always a kind word, always time. And of course, everybody is pulling at her, and she makes time for everybody. And I can't say the same for everybody within franchising social, certainly not people that might be along the same level of Dina, being, you know, former past IFA chairwoman, as involved as she is. Obviously, running a big organization such as the Dwyer Group with multiple brands. So, you know, my hat's off. She's quite an individual. But again, it really resonates well in a culture that's established with the Dwyer Group. And I guess, you know, looking at some of the preparation for the show and seeing some of your notes, you know, first, you know, is it communications or connection when we talk about, you know, franchise operation support? Because, you know, obviously that culture goes on through to the franchisees. So is it communication or connection?
As I was thinking about that, Walter Bond is a great motivational speaker, and we had him last year for our reunion as our featured speaker, and I think we're having him back. He's that good. He talked about that, and I think there's several franchise organizations that have had Walter, and if you haven't, look him up. He will motivate your folks. But he talked about the communication versus connection, and until he talked about that, I never thought about it, you know, because we'd always just say, are you communicating what's going on with them? Or, you know, we've got real poor communication skills. And then it dawned on me, I can say all that I want and tell franchisees all that I want, but if I don't connect with them on a personal level, and if we as Glass Doctor don't connect very well with our franchisees on a personal level, how do we get to where we need to be together? Because it is in interpersonal relationships. On my business card, and I stole this idea, so it's not my brilliant idea, unfortunately. On my business card is my home phone number. And my cell phone number. On every email. Yeah, on every email I send is my home phone number. And I've never seen anybody else do that. Now, I will say, those listening, I get very few calls, hardly ever, but I want our franchisees to understand that they can't say to me, I couldn't get a hold of you. Yes, you
right.
can. Here's my phone. Here's my cell. I'm there 24/7. My wife's in franchising. I'll answer the phone. We don't have a maid or a butler. No, he's not here right now. So, yeah, it's absolutely, it's connection. You have to connect with them.
And Walter Bond is the host now of that Giving You the Business, the franchise reality show, where a franchisee of a particular brand, through some type of undercover process, he's the host on that show, and I got an opportunity to watch that last week for the first time, and I think it's very well done. Certainly, I love seeing franchising front and center on the likes of, you know, Shark Tank, where we had one of our clients, matter of fact, was a replay of their episode, Sub-Zero Ice Cream was on Shark Tank. That just occurred again this past Friday in replay. Of course, Undercover Boss, there's been so many, and I've been grateful to have a lot of them as guests on the show. As I said, you know, Dina, Catherine Monson was on, Shelley Sun was on, Steve Greenbaum was on, really a very heartening story there as well. So it's really nice to see franchising come front and center. And Walter Bond does a great job on that show. And I've had an opportunity to meet Walter Bond at a couple of IFA conferences. And, he's quite an individual. I highly recommend anybody pick up his book as well. I don't know if he has more than one book, but the book that he was promoting at the Sprout Lab booth last year really is an interesting read. You know, Mark, you know, so let's refer to, you know, a franchise operations support person as the franchise consultant.
Okay.
What do franchisees think the franchise consultant role actually is?
First time I was a franchise consultant myself was with Valpak in 2002. And I had all of Canada. I had 23 franchisees. I'd never been in that role before. I was in franchise development before. I remember going up there, and for some reason, the franchisees or the Valpak franchisees in Canada thought that that job was taking them out to dinner. And that was about it. And I think it has to start at the top of the organization in what their role really is. And then having an idea, and one of the things that helped me a lot was I remember sitting down with a franchisee in Oshawa, Canada, just outside of Toronto. And his name was Trevor. I said, Trevor, what do you think, first of all, what do you think the franchisor's job is? And then secondly, what do you think my job is as your franchise consultant or whatever we call the title at Valpak? And after he described what the two were, I said, we're never going to get along because what you think I should be doing and what I think I should be doing is not even close. Because of that, we ended up being good friends, and I'll never forget, he said, what do you know about Canada? And I thought it was a funny answer, I'm here, aren't I? Which was not what he wanted to hear. But in doing that, we had the right to connect. And I could tell him if I disagree with him and exactly what it is. And that franchise consultant's role, in my mind, is to help them take the top-line revenue higher, which increases the bottom-line revenue. Or if they can't take the top-line revenue any higher, at least help them with their bottom-line revenue so they have a good experience as a franchisee. Now, with that said, there's too many times, I think, that they don't communicate on understanding that. That doesn't mean being their best friend. That doesn't mean taking them out to a fancy meal. It really does mean being able to say to them the things that they need to hear, and sometimes you have to ask permission. For instance, Paul, do you want me to tell you today what you want to hear or what you need to hear? Because I will go either way. And once you get through that and they give you the permission, now tell me what I need to hear, and you're okay with that. I might not be, but tell me what I need to hear. Okay, let's go at it. So that's that role then, is, again, to help them become more profitable. And I've always looked at it that way ever since.
You know, certainly there's a lot of responsibility on a franchise consultant's shoulders. There's no doubt. And again, if it is a matter of communication and connection, especially connection, they're going to get a lot more traction working with a franchisee instead of being in a situation where they're butting heads. And I think, you know, part of it, part of the problem, and many smaller franchise organizations run into this, and I see actually some larger organizations run to it as well, as, you know, it's because franchisees think that the franchise consultants are actually compliance officers. And
right.
Where I see it even more to the detriment of the organization and the franchise relationship and the culture of the organization is when franchise organizations, franchisors, get their franchise consultants on the collection side of royalties and other financial obligations. And I understand, you know, in a smaller organization, there's not as many economies of scale as there are with a larger organization that has, you know, full accounting department and what have you. But, you know, I know my word of advice, having started out in franchising as an operations support person, a franchise consultant, if you would, is, you know, try to separate the two, because it's the franchisees that need the most help that are probably behind on their financial obligations. And the last thing you want to do is have them look at the caller ID and see, you know, Paul and Mark calling up and them thinking, oh, man, I really need to talk with him because I need help. But, oh, damn, he's probably calling because I'm behind on my financial obligations, and therefore the call goes unanswered. And I hear you chuckling, and I know you agree.
Well, here's the thing, and Dina would be proud of me if she's listening. That never happens with Dwyer Group. Because all of our franchisees want to pay the royalties on time. No, you're right. No, quite seriously, you're exactly right. And you'll know that people are looking at that number, and they're wondering, is it someone in compliance? And, you know, I mean, we're in a business where there's going to be cyclical changes. There's going to be times when people are people. They fall behind. And the best advice is, if you can connect with your franchisee, where they want to tell you what's going on, and
exactly.
They have this relationship with you, I mean, to the point of saying, hey, let me tell you what's happening here, and I'm struggling, and here's what I need, and then let's how do we get through that stuff? And it's just someone being human. So it's you're right on. It does happen. And then it's such a tough job. You know, it's tough to hire for. How do you describe what it is? Good example. The gentleman who's now my vice president worked for one of our franchisees, our second largest franchisee for 6 years. I hired him to become a franchise consultant. He had no idea. He's like, this is hard. You know, where's the part where I just call them and see how they're doing? But he did a great job. He did exactly what he needed to do because he just came out of the field. And I think he had an advantage because he just came out of the field and knew exactly what it was like to be in their shoes. A lot of us that hire franchise consultants don't have FCs who have actually owned a franchise. And I think, and you know this, Paul, unless you sat down on a Thursday night about midnight and you're trying to figure out how to make payroll, unless you've been there and had your top employee quit, and you're trying to figure out what is that going to mean to the bottom line. You can have all the empathy in the world, but you just don't know.
You know, you're 100% right, and it's interesting you mentioned that. You mentioned the midnight factor because I just started a new radio show, which aired last night at midnight. It was our second week in a row to do it, and the name of the show is What Keeps You Up at Night. And it's specific to small business owners. We haven't had quite the call-in responses I would like, but it is new. But the on-demand access the next day, last Thursday, just blew me away. And you're right. Until you sat there in those shoes, under those circumstances, trying to figure it out, it's really hard to really understand what they're going through. And over the years, I happen to be one of the few, I think, that have been on basically every side of the franchise property, meaning franchisor, franchisee, multi-unit franchisee, area developer, very much an activist within franchising, franchise consultant, now franchisor, again, in my CEO role at Franchise Foundry, but also as a supplier. But I think more importantly, why it resonates so well with me is that I succeeded tremendously as a franchisee and then failed almost catastrophically. So sitting there at midnight, 1 a.m. and 4 a.m., and God, it's amazing how the grandfather clock sounds louder and louder and louder as the night goes on. And out of that, and I think you'll appreciate this, if you haven't heard me say this before, over the years, I've done an informal survey of quote-unquote failed franchisees from all kinds of different industry segments, small, large, fast food, non-food, services, et cetera. And I think last count, the informal survey was about 1,077 franchisees. I think that's a rough number.
A rough number.
And, yeah, a rough number. And, I of course, when I ask a lot of franchisors, certainly ones that don't have the culture that the Dwyer Group has, and I ask them, you know, what causes franchise failure? And two things resonate loud and clear. A, they were undercapitalized, which, of course, I say shame on you for allowing them in the system if they're undercapitalized. Or did they? Are you blaming it on undercapitalization because they actually just ran out of money? That's not undercapitalization. And then the second thing they said is, well, you know, they didn't want to follow a system that basically became a renegade, which, of course, you know, are you saying that because in the last 60 days they were just trying to make things happen and, as you said, you know, just trying to make payroll and survive, so they were just throwing the caution to the wind? Well, when I surveyed, as I said, very informally, very conversational, you know, what actually occurred in these franchisees' lives, 89%, you know, 11% just failed, okay? And we'll just chalk it up to that. But 89%, with an even split in the middle, failed for one or two or a combination of the two reasons. Number one was, you know, basically not having the skill set to operate a small business. I mean, it was amazing at how many that had been in you know, C-level type or executive type of positions with organizations, but were very focused in a particular area. Just didn't have the knowledge of, you know, marketing 101 and recruiting 101 and this, that, and the other thing, and found it quite overwhelming, even to the point that I had discussed this with a former HR senior VP of a Fortune 500 company that failed miserably as a franchisee. And he said, it was my own fault. I just didn't understand, you know, business as I thought I did. And when I talked to franchisees about incorporating some more of the basics into it and not assuming that they understand all that in addition to the process that is defined in the operations manual, the system, so to speak, it's kind of like mixed reviews, like, I don't know if we need to go back that elementary, but, you know, to me, at least expose them to that, or at least identify where that might be a weakness in the onboarding process. And then the second thing, which I really found troubling, was some type of personal situation that led towards failure, whether it be being very successful at the beginning and putting the white powder up their nose, bringing junior on too early in the business, not having spousal support even getting into the business, at certainly when it became, you know, a 24-hour-a-day thought process 7 days a week. And the list goes on and on. And to that, I hear a lot of franchise executives kick back to me and say, well, you know, we're not, you know, family therapists. And I know that the job is not to be, you know, friends with the franchisee. But here's what often occurs, as you know, when there's that compliance hat that's put into place, that collection hat. And I've seen this, and I've watched a lot of franchise consultants on the phone with a franchisee say, you know, hey, Mark, how's it going? And if there's no financial obligations that are in arrears, the conversation does turn friendly, improperly, but friendly. And they say, Mark, you know, I understand, you know, how's your wife doing? I understand she's retired, and, you know, your daughter's getting married next week. Good, good, you know, that's great. And how's your son doing? His first, you know, year in college. Oh, good, you're great. All right, well, you know, if you need anything, give me a call. No meaning to the conversation. But yet, if they had been tracking, you know, the sales and tracking performance and to me, getting the feel for what their attitude is on a weekly basis or however often the call is, you can kind of see these trends. And too many organizations focus only on the financial part. Franchisees currently, they're one of the cases, fine, they're a good franchisee. But yet, if their sales are trending downward, you know, to me, it would raise a flag. And I would say, you know, Mark, I noticed you were here, you're here, and I just see this dip there. And I know that it kind of coincides when you brought Junior into the business. Mm-hmm. What's going on there? And I think that has to do with meaningful conversations. It's certainly we're not there as consultants to be a marriage counselor, a teacher, or, you know, a coach. And as you had mentioned in preparation, you know, was Bobby Knight a friend? I don't think so. Certainly
not
one throwing chairs at you. So, I mean, it's interesting. What are your thoughts on all of that?
Well, I was fortunate because I got in the whole franchise world when I was about 26 years old, a company called Kinetico. It was a water software company. And I spent my first 5 years at corporate, moved to Ohio. And in those 5 years at corporate, Paul, I sat there and I hate to say it, but probably looked down to the franchisees because, boy, if they did what we talked about them doing, would they ever be successful? I left corporate after 5 years, and I went into the field as a general manager and then a partner in a Connecticut franchise. And then I changed my tune, and I said, you know, those guys at corporate, they are idiots. And that was it, right? And that's where I started to learn this interdependence. As I became president, one of the best things I've done in 30-some years, Paul, I became president, and we would hear, I would say, if we were having a problem with one of our franchisees, I would ask our previous president, Mark, what's going on or why? Or ask somebody else. And they said, you know what? They are not following the system. They're just not following the system. And so finally, you know, I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer. I was asking one of my FCs, so what aren't they doing? And they said, you know, Mark, we have a systems analysis. They aren't doing that. Post 114 things in that systems analysis. Well, yeah.
Wow.
So as I became president, I sent a note out to all of my FCs and internal people that work with franchisees, and I said, do me a favor. Would you write down the top 10 things in order that a franchisee needs to do to make money? Top 10 things. And they said, sure. But a week later, I had a list of 24 different things. So first, that told me that if you're in the Northeast, what you're learning is different than the Southwest, than if you're in Waco, than if you're somewhere else. So we did not have a consistent message. It was based on how that franchise consultant felt were the best things to do. Now, keep in mind, there's still 114 things. So then I created what was called a dream team. A dream team was not an elected team. It was a group of franchisees, about 23. Again, I picked the name Dream Team because it brought me back to the '84 Olympics, and I thought that was a cool name and a cool team. And these were franchisees who had been with us at least 5 years, and I saw them that they were going to be around another 5 years. And Joe Bordeaux over at Valpak, I stole this idea from him, or at least parts of the idea. What I did then is I took the list of 24 things that we had, took off the point value, and how we pointed the value we gave them is if they were the first place thing, they got 10 points, second place, 9, you know, third, or number 3, 8, all the way down to the 10th most important thing, they got 1 point. So that's how we had the point value. I took away all the point values that we had at corporate off these 24 items, and I alphabetized them. And then I sent them out to these 23 franchisees, my dream team, and I said, all right, in order, and I don't care if you use this list or not, here's some things you might use. Yeah, it can be anything in the world. Would you list what you believe are the top 10 things, again, in order, for you to become successful? And they said where I was. Some said, Mark, where I was in the beginning, where I'm now, whatever. I said, no, I don't care. No, where you are right now, what you have to do to be the most successful you can be. We aggregated all those, and again, number one thing got 10 points, number two, 9, all the way down the line. So we aggregated all those numbers together, and we came up with 14 things, and the reason it's 14 is the numbers between, you know, 10 to 14 were one or two numbers, but between 14 and 15 were a lot of numbers, a lot of points. And so we came up with something called our Fab 14, and our Fab 14 are the 14 things in order that a Glass Doctor franchisee has to do to be the most successful. And now I preach that all the time. I walked into a franchise in, I think it was Maryland, and I said, do you have the Fab 14 on your desk? He says, no, I don't even know what it is. Okay, let's pull it out. So I pulled it out, and he said, I don't agree with number 7. Paul, I said, I don't care. I didn't make the list. I said, don't do it. I don't like number 9 either. I don't care. Don't do it. But then I said, why wouldn't you do what the most successful Glass Doctor franchisees are doing day in, day out? And the reason it became so smart to do this, in my mind anyhow, maybe I just convinced myself of this, is that now I'm not preaching from the corporate end what someone has to do to be successful. I'm giving them in order what they need to do as a franchisee based on our most successful franchisees in the network of over 50 years. Now it's different for me. It's different for me, Paul. And number 2 is like knowing your numbers. You know, this goes back to what you talked about. But number 1 for us is phone handling. So, and I'll tell them, if you want to be great, if you want to make a lot of money in this business, be good on the phone. You know, you're paying for leads to come in. If you don't handle the phone right, then guess what? You're blowing all that money. And so we've got 14 things we focus on. So going back to your question, I think now with our franchise consultants, what we're working on now is providing a stoplight system. A red, yellow, and green, and trying to identify all 14 things, where that franchisee is in each one. So is number 1, are they red, yellow, or green? Are they green, they're doing the right thing, yellow, yeah, kind of, or red, they just aren't doing that. And if we can do that with our franchisees, then they know exactly where they need to go, and more importantly, we know exactly how we can work with them to accomplish those things. And that's the difference maker.
Absolutely. And I think that just, again, goes back to culture and the code of values. I know are broken down into, you know, 3 categories: respect, integrity, customer focus, and, of course, having fun in the process, as you said. And when you let down those type of potential barriers, you know, by going out to the field and using information shared from the franchise base, I think it really speaks volumes. But I don't think that could be even possible if there wasn't this level of, I always like to refer to a kind of a 3-leg process. And in this case, to me, it's, you know, truth, trust, and transparency.
Right.
Obviously, the organization, there's been a culture that has been built, and it's a living, breathing thing. And the franchisees trust the organization enough to be able to share important information to be able to be used for the benefit of the whole. And I think that speaks volumes of what the Dwyer Group has accomplished.
I think from my standpoint, too, Paul, because I was not in the glass business, I don't have any preconceived notions of what's good or what's bad. And so I really try and listen to the franchisees. Now, that's not to say I don't make tons of mistakes. You can't even imagine the mistakes I make. But I'm good at listening of what do you guys think is most important? Where do you think we need to go? and not just tell them, here's where we're going, but all right. For instance, we're working on a project right now. We brought in six franchisees from around the country last week into Dallas for a one-day meeting. They've all been around. They're all successful franchisees. And, okay, what do you guys think we should do in this area? And we brought in our marketing people, brought in some corporate people, and then we spent and we brought in a facilitator from an agency, and we said, all right, where do we go in this direction? And I'll defer to them almost every time because they've done it. Some of these guys have done it 25 years. Well, they know the business. And when you start to pull a bunch of people together so it's not just one person's idea, especially as an expert, two things happen. Number one, you learn. I learned. And then secondly, they're proud and they're glad to tell the rest of the network, the franchise network, is, no, we helped create this. Versus, let me show you what those guys did now. Boy, is this another stupid idea out of Waco. So, you know, it's trying to understand our franchisees and appreciate their franchisees and what they mean to our system. That's why I have a job.
You know, you mentioned that you were formerly with Valpak, and I did want to shout out to somebody at Valpak that I had a chance to meet sitting with you also at Frank Camp, Jim Buckley.
Yeah.
I know Jim is a very big fan of the show, and it was great to put a face with a name, and I did want to shout out to him because he's a big proponent of the show, and I know him. And of course, also knowing your involvement with VetFran, obviously you work day in and day out with Mary. I know you're also and assuming this, but I know it to be true, friends with Lonnie Helgerson, real big on culture, and I'm so happy to see that the success that him and his wife are achieving with Island Time Treasures, just phenomenal, one of the really great guys in franchising. You know, as I circle back to this, and I'm thinking about what you're saying, I'm looking at the code of ethics, and I know that the Dwyer Group and all its brands are based in Waco, Texas, very much a small town in Texas. A lot of people aren't privileged to know what it's like to live in and around a small town. And I think, you know, part of that culture of that small town, that everybody knows each other, I think resonates through to the Dwyer Group. Do you find that to be true?
Yeah, I'll tell a story on Dina. Every Saturday morning at 8 o'clock, we have a group of people, the runners and the walkers, and the whole goal is to run or walk for 1 hour and then have breakfast because you've justified losing the calories so that you can have breakfast together. And Dina is there probably 60% of the time. Mary and her husband Will are there about 90% of the time. There's other company presidents that are there, Doug Rogers from Mr. Plants is there, and Doyle James from AirServe is there. And they're there just having fun together. There'll be stuff down on the river. They'll have a summer music series, and they'll have people come in once a month. Or last month, there's a winery outside of town. And on Clifton, and a bunch of the company presidents and wives, and Dina was there. I didn't have a chance to go to this one. But we're friends. You know, besides being co-workers, we're friends. And this is one of the only companies that I've worked with in my life, and I've worked at a couple, goodness knows, where the people that I work with, I enjoy working with, but I also wouldn't mind being their neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of those things goes back to the code of values is, you know, never saying anything about anyone that you wouldn't say to him or her.
Mm-hmm.
And then really acknowledging everyone's right from their own perspective and not being afraid to sit in a president's meeting and ask the questions. You know, Rob White from Rainbow moved here from, he was a franchisee, and he moved here about the same time that I did. And he moved from Virginia, and he became president. And, a year and a half later, I became president. Another good friend. But I can look at us and just be glad to hang out. I've gone to Mary's house for New Year's Eve. Her mom was over from France. There's a bunch of people that went and did the Paris Marathon. And I'm not so sure it's the size of the town. By the way, my wife and I are walkers. I don't want anybody to think we ever ran in our life. You know, that would really defy our image. But I don't. But because that there's a culture, and I don't think if we were in Dallas, I think we'd do it. You know, if we live close enough to each other. But there's just some magic there that has much more to do with the people here. And I'll say we had a lot of that at Valpak too. You know, because of how Joe was. Joe Bordeaux was a fabulous president, and there's a lot of us that became friends, and we'd hang out. You mentioned Jim Buckley. I interviewed Jim before he started, and I'll never forget, and I can't tell you all the details on the air because, you know, people would really be upset with me, but I'll never forget we had a mystery party, a mystery dinner at our house, and Jim Buckley and his wife were there, and all the people there, I think we had 20 people there, I think 18 were from Valpak, and that's very unusual, you know. So, once you have that culture, I don't think it matters where you're from. I think it just permeates throughout the organization, and it becomes you. I think that's what they hired.
Right. So, you know, obviously you have a culture. It's a great culture. It's very strong. It's really as close to family as any organization that I've seen within franchising. And I know some, you know, come close, and probably there are some out there that may even rival it. But, you know, it's got to be difficult for new franchisees coming in to feel like they're accepted, to not be intimidated. And I would imagine that through the process, and of course, you know, franchise consultants obviously play a big part of that. Do you have a different team for new franchisees?
Again, an idea we stole from when I was with Joe at Valpak. We had a team at Valpak called Team One, and Team One worked only with new franchisees. And here's what I found. I don't care anybody's background. They can have a PhD. They could do anything in the world. They're the smartest person in the world. When they become a franchisee of any brand, we hit them with this fire hose of information, and then we expect them to retain it. If you have a franchise consultant that's working with, pick a number, 25 experienced franchisees, and then they've got a new franchisee, I believe just because of the nature of the beast, the franchise consultant forgets what it's like to be brand new. And when you're working with a $4 million customer and then someone just coming out of the chute in a very small town, you know, you tend to focus more on the $4 million customer. What I saw then and what we still have today is a team of people that just work with new franchisees. And that's it. And I only want them to handle about a dozen, because I think any more than a dozen, you really can't provide the support that you need to support. I think there's companies that grow too fast. If you don't support your franchisees in the beginning, they won't make it till later, or they won't make it very well. To permeate that culture a little bit, two things happen. When they come to training, every training session, I invite all the new franchisees to my house for dinner. I cook steaks, and I invite my entire staff that night. They don't have to come. I mean, they know this. I don't care if they come or not, but if they'd like to come and meet the new franchisee, you're doing it in a place that's very comfortable, and you're doing it in the Dwyer environment, you know, in the Glass Doctor Dwyer environment, which is nice. Then what we've figured out, again, after many mistakes, is we've also assigned the person that will end up being their permanent franchise consultant to work with them on a more limited basis, so that after they graduate from being that, working with that person, then they know who they're going to work with as their permanent consultant. So the three of them, the new franchisee consultant, the franchise consultant, and the franchisee will put the budget together. So they know each other from the get-go. And I think through all the mistakes we've made, that's the right way of doing it. I like the way we've done it now. The other thing I think you have to do, and we're not good at this yet, Paul. I hate to say it, but we're not good at this yet. I believe you have to tell franchisees, you have to set the expectations of what people have done before them at least in the last 25 or last 30. Because everybody coming into a system thinks that it's going to be different for me because of my past, because of whatever. And so just because, right. Let's pick numbers, let's think that the average new franchisee, pick a number, it does $100,000 to make it real simple. But let's say that, or they think that they can do $200,000, and the average is $100,000. If you can show them, but here's what the best has done, here's what the average has done, and here's what the lower 10% or lower 25% have done, so they start having realistic expectations of what they've done or what they need to do. It's kind of like I play golf, not well, but I play golf. It's nice to know what par is on the hole. And I heard the best story for any golfer out there. I think it was Willie Nelson that said, you know, owning your own golf course is a wonderful thing because you can make par anything you want. He said, for instance, my sixth hole, par 14. He said, I eagled that puppy yesterday.
That's a great story. I love that.
So it's the new franchisee coming in and having these wild expectations of what they should be able to do. And down deep, you're saying, I don't think they'll do that. But if they can grab them and say, this is the best person's done, they can shoot for realistic stuff. I think that's important to help them from right from the beginning.
Absolutely agree. But let me ask you something, because, you know, a lot of the listeners on Franchise Today are from, you know, young startup or, you know, on the verge of being emerging brands, and obviously don't have the number of franchisees that the Dwyer Group has or most of their brands have. So some of them might be saying, you know, Mark, I hear what you're saying, and it's great when you have the system mature enough that you have, you know, a large staff and you can afford the luxury of having an A-team that starts out the franchisees and then franchise consultants, and you have, you know, team meetings and rah, 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 and you all get together and walk together and have people over at your house and you all intermingle. But what would you say to the individuals or to the brand specifically, you know, that might have a corporate staff that entails, you know, three people, four people? How would that, what you're saying, transcend to them?
You have to start with where you are and not apologize for that. If you go back in time, you look at, you know, you look at the stories about the gentleman in Cincinnati who invented the fillet of fish. At that point, you know, I forget what he paid McDonald's, this meager amount, but he had Cincinnati and Dayton and all these areas, but it's like for $1,000, right? What you're going to find is that an early franchisee gets in usually with a lot more territory than they're ever going to need and usually a lot less money than what anybody else is going to get in 4, 5, 6 years later. You have to work with them. You have to, again, connect and let them know you're going to work together. I don't think it's that important where you have to go out and work with them on site all the time. And I learned this as a franchisee. I didn't have time for corporate staff to come to my store. You know, we can accomplish the same on a phone call or especially with live meeting or something. So I'm looking at them and they're looking at me for a very cheap price. With my guys, we run pretty lean. They'll tell you that, my franchise consultant, very lean. And, you know, they each handle 30, 35 stores, and they do most of their work on the phone and live meeting. And I want them to go out and see the franchisee once every 2 years. Because I just don't think the franchisee has to – you don't need to tie them up. They're busy. They're trying to make money. They're making money.
Right.
So don't think that I've got to be out there with them all the time. I think you have to listen all the time. And then you have to start looking at what are best practices. All right? Listen to your franchisees. Find out what the best practices are. One of my goals has been over the years that I want to find out who's the best in every one of these areas. Okay, there's this fallacy, I think, Paul, that one person or one franchisee is going to be the mentor in everything in the world, this and this and this and this and this. And what I find is just the opposite. You probably need 5 or 6 different fellow franchisee mentors to get you to the promised land of what's the best, because someone's going to be best at phone answering, someone will be best on financials, someone will be best at something else. As long as you start working as franchisees in your network, and as long as a franchisor and a franchise consultant, you start giving your franchisees best practices, identify them, and then let them understand who those people are through regional meetings or regional phone calls, and then your national meeting. I don't think it's that tough. I really don't. And do all the little things. You know, make sure the president of the company is calling the franchisees, that small brand. Let them know that he's there. Let them know that he cares. That helps tremendously. So I don't think you need this $1 million budget at all.
Great. That's very, very great advice, I believe. And I love what you said about, you know, you don't have to be here all the time, but listen all the time. And I don't think a lot of organizations, I do think a lot of organizations lose sight of it. And, you know, probably not always intentionally, maybe not even at all intentionally. They get busy wearing so many different hats. But, of course, they do have a responsibility to the franchisees. And as you mentioned earlier, about 10 or 12 minutes ago, about interdependency, I'm a firm believer that a franchise relationship is absolutely interdependent.
You know, there's something else that we did a couple years ago. I'm innovative. that's my God-given strength. I mean, to a fault sometimes. Mark, can we just stay with this for a month? For when we did reviews of our franchise consultants, and I would urge everybody to do this, I have no idea what they do. I mean, I do, but I don't. I know how they are with me, and I know how they are when we're together. I have no idea how they react to our franchisees. So once a year, when it's review time, I send an email out, SurveyMonkey, and I have these six questions anybody can steal. Number one is an overall rating, one the lowest and 10 the highest. How would you rate, you know, Paul's support in 2012? Number two, do you attend his monthly phone calls? If not, why? Number three, do you provide them with Paul, with you being with monthly financials, so we can better help you look at the profitability of your business? Yes, no. If no, why? Number four, how did they help you most this year? Number five, what do you think they should have done for you if they didn't do in 2012? And number six, how can they help you most in 2013? It's confidential. They can sign their name. They don't have to sign their name. I share the results when it comes to review time. And in doing so, they have a much better idea of where they stand, the franchise consultant, where they stand. And are they answering the needs or the perceived needs of the franchisee? And when you do that, Paul, it sure makes things a whole lot easier, again, trying to connect and trying to have your franchise consultant understand what his franchisees are looking for. And I've seen a tremendous improvement in the last couple of years, especially one of my franchise consultants. He was such a nice guy. I mean, a wonderful human being, but he couldn't say the tough stuff, and he got better at saying the tough stuff, and this year he ranked the highest of anybody. So it proves that you can do what's right and help your franchisees, and they really do respect it.
Well, certainly, Mark, thanks for being my guest today on Franchise Today, and short notice at that. And I really appreciate it. I think you've really eloquently and distinctly defined, you know, some best practices with respect to operations support and franchise relations. The code of values by the Dwyer Group, I know, is on the back of your card. I think it's just phenomenal, front and center. Respect, integrity, customer focus, having fun in the process, whole bunch of subtopics in there. Just tremendous, and thank you again for sharing all your information, experience, and wisdom today.
Paul, thanks for the opportunity. I'm probably a lot more fun than anybody else listening to this call. I know I have.
Well, I really appreciate it. It was really great, and I'm sure a lot of people, it will resonate very well. Thanks again.
Okay, thanks, Paul.
Next week, my guest is Robert Stidman of Franchise Dynamics. We'll be talking about franchise sales and development. That's next Thursday at noon Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Central Time. Until then, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great, great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.